for whom talk of a dice account is complete and utter news and never heard of it before. Right, well, okay. Right. Good. Fine. You should have been sent a mail message to your nominated email address saying, follow this link, and there's a shaking of a head there. Anyway, this is a problem that we'll sort out later, he said, sweeping it deftly under the carpet. Although you will need a dice account in order to do the practical sessions, which start this afternoon. There are four sessions this week, practical lab sessions where you get to play around a bit, and you will need a dice account for those. If you don't have a dice account, then I suspect the easiest thing to do is to go along to the school office, the Informatics Student Services office on the fourth floor of Appleton Tower. If I say fourth floor of Appleton Tower, do you all immediately go, ah? Or do you go, what? If I say fourth floor of Appleton Tower, the Informatics Student Services office, do you all think you can find it, should the need arise? If anyone doesn't think they can find it, please see me afterwards. Anyway, right, okay. Yes, we're 36 seconds into the lecture. And we have some latecomers. Hello, latecomers. If you're lucky, there should be some handouts over in the... Or are they gone? Right, sorry. You're going to have to find someone to share with. So make yourself look as appealing as possible. Find a spare seat and lean over. Right, I'd better get shifting because we've got a bit of stuff to get through. So, first things first, your account information that you've already been sent, which is university-wide, you'll have a login name, which will be something like S12345678 9, or something like that. Anyway, you're all familiar with that at least. Okay? That's your matriculation number and your login. And when you log in to central services or you log in to our machines, then you'll use that account name, but you'll need to set a separate password for dice machines. So when you have logged in, you will have your own password, which we would like you to make sure is reasonably secure. One thing we would, well, as matriculated students, you have agreed on pain of death and other exotic punishments to abide by the computing regulations. One of which said regulations is, I hereby promise not to lend my password and account details to anyone ever, 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 ever. So don't, basically. If you have a friend come up to stay and they say, oh, can I check my email, please? And they say, here's my account, go and log in, whatever. And if you find you've then sent an obscene message to the principal or head of department, then more fool you. So please keep your password details to yourself and make sure that it's something reasonably unguessable or uncrackable. Now, we're currently running on DICE machines, Scientific Linux 6, for those of you who know or care. We've just upgraded them, and they've upgraded the desktop machines here, so everything is in a bit of a mismatched state. So I apologize if the demonstration is less than smooth, shall we say. But basically, you log into a DICE machine, they're in the labs, and you can be able to sit down, you can log in, and by default, you'll get a desktop which is reasonably similar to a Windows machine or any sort of graphical interface on any machine these days. I'd love to show you an image of one, but unfortunately I can't. So you'll have to save that delight and delectation until you first log on in the DICE environment and all its glory is displayed radiantly before you. Once you've logged in, you'll see the desktop. There'll be a few icons. There'll be things called taskbars, one at the top, one at the bottom, and they will allow you to, with drop-down menus for things like applications, and there'll be a system logout and various other bits and pieces. Reasonably straightforward. Play with this afternoon, and you will be absolutely fine. I don't know how much disk space you have on your home machines, but here you are given a disk space allowance. I would love to say of 640K, way back in the days, that was more than anybody would ever, ever need. Unfortunately, now you get a little bit more than that. you get a whole gigabyte. A whole gigabyte to yourselves to do with exactly what you will. Well, within reason, of course. So that's your quota. If you feel you need more, you can... there is a clock here. So you can see what the time is, but I can't. I'm not sure what that's supposed to be. Anyway, moving swiftly on. You get 1 gigabyte. If you feel that you need more space than that, you'll have to take it up with your course lecturer or your supervisor. We have to get someone, we have to get a proper grown-up to say they need more space. I apologise for that, but that's the way the world works. If you move on to become a postgrad, you start out with 5 gigs, but that's just the luck of the world. I was going to show you... Sorry, I'm typing the password here. I can't do 2 things at once. You'll see right at the bottom here, can you see those screens? Are they all right? Or do I have to stop playing with buttons? There were some buttons that I could... They've moved things around. Anyway, can you see that reasonably well? Is there anyone who can't see it and wishes to admit to not being able to see it clearly and precisely? Good, right, that's fine. You will see there that there's one thing there right at the bottom named yesterday. That, I'll go about this, what all this means in a little while, but basically there is an area of your home space called yesterday, which is a mirror of your space that you're using. That is the state of your disk space yesterday, hence the name, cunning, hey? That doesn't count as part of your quota. So if you start deleting files to try and save space, don't think, what's this thing yesterday, and look in it. Oh, it's got loads of stuff, don't need that, delete it. You won't be able to delete it anyway, but don't worry about it because that's separate from your quota and is not part of it. If you decide that you've lost something and you need to reclaim it from yesterday, you can just take a copy out and there you go. I did mean to say that I am happy to take impromptu questions, so if I'm whittering on and not making a lot of sense, then please feel to stick up your hand and say, you said that wonderfully well, but what did you mean? Or alternatively, if there's something that crops up that I haven't mentioned and you would like, then shout. If I think it's something that's worth dealing with at the time, I will. Otherwise, I'll just rabbit on. So as I've said, once you log in, you get a toolbar and a basic desktop with graphical stuff. You can play around with that this afternoon. Click away to your heart's content. One thing that I will just mention that you may not refer to, well, you may not have heard referred to in this way, although you may have done, the idea of focus, does that sort of, that's what you're doing now, obviously. But when you're moving around the screen, particular options will become active when the mouse cursor is over them, or you may need to click to make them active. The default on the GNOME desktop is click to make active, so you'll need to move the cursor over the application that you want to use and then just click, and then you can do stuff. So that's focusing. You can change, there are various ways of changing these things. The one nice thing about Linux and Unix in general is that it is incredibly configurable. You can, if you don't like the way the environment works, you can change it so that it will work in the way that you want it to work. You can play around with that again as one of the things you want to do this afternoon. A little bit more terminology. Under Windows, you normally have things like folders and command windows or something or other like that. Within the Unix world, a folder is called a directory. It is the same as a folder, it's just called a directory because that's what it should be called. And windows are normally called either a window, terminal window, but normally shells or a shell window. Because shells are like a command interpreter and you just get a way of talking to a command interpreter. You can have different shells, but basically a shell is this sort of thing here with a prompt, which is the bit at the bottom. When you do nothing, if you're sitting there contemplating the universe for a while and you look at the screen and it's gone dark or it's locked, then you'll need to type your password in to reactivate that. Don't please come in, whatever time you come in, 11 o'clock of the morning, sit down in front of the screen, plonk your books down, say, right, I'll go away and have a coffee, I'll log in, and then lock the screen and go away and have a coffee. Don't, because there are few enough machines as it is So if you want to leave the machine for any length of time, please log out. It's only polite, and we all want to be polite. There is an option, I think, on the logout button which will say switch user. Unfortunately, that doesn't work at the minute. So you can press the switch user button all you like. It ain't going to happen. So just so you know that it's not you that's wrong, it's the machine. And then once you finish the session, you can log out. There'll be a logout button on there, so that's fine. As I said before, you will need a password to log in. Once you've logged in using your password, you can change it to something more reliable, so do that. Now, I assume most of you are familiar with this wonderful new piece of technology called the web. I could go on at great and endless length about that, but I won't. Suffice it to say that in my day, there was no web. So think yourselves lucky. Lots of the stuff, I'll kick off. What have they got on here? Something called Explorer. Anyway, the course information will be available. Most of the stuff is available online. You'll be able to find these notes, such as they are online. The practical information will also be online. We've changed the layout or the provision this year, so I'm not sure if this... have I bookmarked this? Bookmarked. Ha! Right, if I could type it would help. I'll just give you the URL for this. It's in the pages. Teaching courses in course system. It may even be on there somewhere. I apologise if... Right, hurrah! First time lucky. There is a God. This, by the way, is me, for my sins, which are many. If you've got any problems with the initial stage of the things, please feel free to mail me. These lecture notes are available by this link. The first practical, sensibly entitled logging on, is also there. And the second one will be available shortly, as they say in all the best shops. Right, so you've logged in, you started browsing the web. There are individual home pages for members of staff and the like, but they'll be advertised as and when they're necessary. One thing that is going to be quite useful is the web support form. There's a lot of information here. There's the FAQ and general blurb about most things. So make good use of it. I'm sure support will be incredibly delighted if for you to mail them and just say, it's broke. They're the sorts of messages they love receiving. If you are going to report a fault, please make sure that it is as detailed as you can possibly make it. Not down to the atomic level, but certainly to the molecular. The more we know about a problem, the easier it's going to be to fix. Even if you think it may be the case that someone else has reported it, we'd rather have two reports of a fault than no reports at all. Everyone's wandering around thinking, when's it going to be fixed? And if no one's told support, they don't know. So, read the FAQ, give as much detail. If that doesn't have the information you want, give as much detail on the support form and fire it off. If you're lucky, you'll get a reasonably quick response, but there are several folks, so please be prepared to wait for a minute or two before you ring up and start shouting very loudly. Printing. I will mention printing because it's probably a good idea. This year we've just introduced printing quota, and you get a whole £7.50's worth of printing budget to start with, which roughly takes you, I think, to about 150 sheets, although it varies, because if you print out one sheet, which is just printed on one side, a blank on the other, I think that's 5 pence or 10 pence or something. Anyway, it's all in the help there information, and you can print out double-sided as well. But basically, if you want to read War and Peace, get it from the library, don't print it out. because given the size of the book, you'll end up paying for it anyway. And it's just been judged so that the amount of coursework we think you need to print out should roughly come to about 150 sheets. More than that, and we'll start charging you, because we are a... No, I better not say that. Anyway, there should be printers on the floors in Appleton Tower, and one of the first things that you'll need to do when you log on for the first time is to set your default printer. There are printers... We haven't given you a default printer simply because we don't know exactly where you're going to sit and which your preferred printer is going to be. So you'll be able to choose a printer and then set that as your default, and then when you print, it'll automatically go to that printer. There will be a way of doing that, which will be part of the practical this afternoon and subsequent practicals. Network access. As we established at the beginning, most of you have a machine at home, and if you want to connect to machines here, then you can, but we only allow certain machines to be world-facing so that you can connect to those. If you can't go straight to a desktop machine because they're all firewalled. So the notes give you a list of three machines there particularly. There's student.ssh in FedAcuc and ssh.infedAcuc, which you should be able to connect to from everywhere. If you've got an SSH client on your machines at home, then that should work. If you're fortunate enough to live in university accommodation, then they have their own access mechanisms and it may be slightly better. There's also wireless, which I see some of you are carrying these strange and portable devices. There should be wireless floating around in the ether as we speak, and you should be able to get access to that. But even the wireless within the tower or in the forum, for example, we class that as an insecure system, so you won't be able to get access to the same services. I don't think you'll be able to print, for example, using a wireless connection. You'll need to connect to a desktop machine and do that. Now, that's the brief sort of services introductory thing over. Is everyone absolutely ecstatic with everything I've said so far? Do you have a mobile phone by any chance? Let that be a lesson to everybody else in here, so just in case. I should have flashed up one of those no mobile things, but anyway, it's fine. No, you can decolour now. Anyway, where was I? Yes, the general services introduction that I've just given. Is everyone happy with that? Or does anyone have any questions that they feel I haven't waffled on at sufficient length for? Okay, right, great. So, what does that say? Why am I blind? It says 25 minutes past 11. Right, okay, so we've got just over half an hour. I think there's only one person who said they were reasonably familiar with Linux. I don't know whether that's applies to Unix generally. Anyone reasonably familiar with the Unix file system? Okay, a few of you. Right, okay. So, but most not. So I won't be wasting my time completely. A Unix file system, the way it's stored its file is hierarchical. It's basically folders and files, but we call them directories and files. And a directory is just a location, a bucket, a container for other files and other directories. The one thing that we do with Unix, of which this here is an example, we use shells a lot, so we do a lot of command line interaction rather than none of these graphical, clicky, pointy things. We want you to do some work. So in order to make that as inconvenient as possible, seriously though, you can do lots of things with a graphical application, but the point of a graphical application is that it was designed to do something. The nice thing about Unix is that it's designed to do everything, and all you need to do is tell it what to do. And you can do that from the command line. You are reasonably unconstrained. A Unix command line looks like this this thing here is called the prompt, and obviously you've got the cursor here and it's just a vast expanse of nothingness to the right. As I've shown here, these are just file listings, and basically what happens is you get a sort of a text representation of the file system in this way. So this is a hierarchical file system, and this
starts with this initial slash, which has a special name. It's called the root of the file system. Because it's a tree, and trees have their roots in the air, the first thing that you see is the root, and you move down to the branches. And basically all this is doing, this is the root of the file system. Everything else, these bits, are directories beneath the root. Subsequent of these slashes are just separators. The initial slash called root is a location in itself, but all the other subsequent slashes are merely dividers, which can be slightly confusing. And everything in between these two slashes is a directory name. And as you can see, they can be just letters or letters and dots or single letters. This is in my home directory, so you'll see my home directory is a location called Roger, in a directory called R, in a directory called User, in a directory called That, in a directory called That. For anyone for whom AFS means anything, you'll know a bit more. But we use the Andrew file system, which is a global file system. And by default, your permissions and your access will be set reasonably privately. But be aware that this is a truly global file system. Anyone in the world can see your files if the permissions are set right. And when I say the world, I mean the world. So do be very careful to check that your file permissions are appropriate. And never keep anything of a particularly personal nature on the machines unless you absolutely have to. Intimate communication between you and your paramour should be avoided at all costs, unless you want to run the risk that they could possibly be published worldwide. Maybe that's what you're into, I don't know. But anyway, do make sure that the permissions are set correctly. And the textual representation of the file tree is done in this manner. If a path doesn't have a leading slash, so Anyway, if it doesn't have a leading slash, it's a relative location. And I think... So I've now moved to the inf-teach folder, and if I do an ls, which is a listening command, you can just see a handful of files. The nice thing about Unix commands is that the command name is the first thing that you type after the prompt. You get flags after that, things called flags, which are little ways of tweaking what that command does. What I've done here is given the flag minus F, which just says, give me a little bit more information. And what it's done is it's printed a trailing slash after things which are in fact directories. So here you can see that things like choice one, choice two do not have a trailing slash in this situation, so they're just ordinary files. Documents and examples have a trailing slash, so they are a container. They are directories, or in the PC world, folders. But once you find your way around, then you can use path names and this sort of hierarchy to make organization a little bit simpler. You've already seen me use the command cd, which is a change directory command. And basically, if you log in, the first place that you are sort of dumped by the system is your home directory. You can move around and you can navigate around. And if you say, help, I don't know where I am, I want to go home, if you just type cd, that will take you back to your home directory. Without an argument, cd takes you to your home directory. If you give it any other path name, it will try and move you to that location. But without any arguments at all, it will just take you home. So that's easy enough to do. The pwd command is short for print working directory. It just tells you where you are. And as you've seen, I've used it a couple of times. This is very frustrating. I shall move the keyboard. It's movable, then move it. So as we've seen before, it just prints out a path name. It tells you where you are and then what you can do with that. I have shown you the ls command. It also has a flag called minus o. I'm not actually sure what that stands for. Previous versions of Unix had minus L for long listing. But anyway, never mind. So this will print out much more information. When you're bored of a day, then you can look through this sort of thing. This is the permission set that applies to non-AFS file space. There are also different sets of permissions that apply to AFS file space called access control lists. There's information online about those, and I suggest you read it up. There isn't really, unfortunately, time to go into those in any great detail here. There are other if you want to make a copy of a file, then you'll use the CP command. And you just give it the file name you want to move and then something else. I think that's fine. And all that does is create a new copy of the file called testing2 and called it goo. It would have been foo, but G got there first. So that's the way of copying. Again, all I'm doing is just skimming through this stuff so you get a rough idea. You'll be able to play at your leisure. If you want to view a file, you can. There's a command called less, which is a pager. It's just a utility which shows you a page of a text document at a time. I've no idea what's in this file we've just created called goo. Hopefully nothing embarrassing. In fact, one line of gobbledygook. Whether you think of that as embarrassing or not, I don't know. You will see that it's effectively, it's tried to display a page. It's only got one line in it, so it's just displayed that line. But it's given you the file name, and it's told you that it's the end of the file. If there was a longer file, it would just wait. You'd hit the space bar or something. It would show you the next page and so on. And you just hit Q to quit, and then it takes you back to the prompt. There was originally a pager called more, but then they wanted to beef it up a bit and make it do other stuff, and they couldn't call it more, so they called it less. So less is more. But that's the way the world works. When you are in your home directory, you can also create new directories or folders with the mukdir command, and that will just create another directory. Give it a name, and you're off, and you've got another folder. In this, what could be seen as a deficiency in Unix, there's no rename command. So what you need to do, there's a move command, abbreviated to MV, which allows you to move a file from one place to another. And you can also use it to move a file to the same place but with a different name, and that's what you do if you want to rename something. So if we wanted to rename goo to foo, then that's the command that we would use. And that has now created somewhere here this new entity called foo. And the courier is just taking it around the motorcycle now. So there's no rename command. You just use move instead as a particular instance of that. There are millions of commands that you will use, or you can use, certainly. A very useful one is the man command. Now, don't get your hopes up. That's short for manual, not for anything else. And it displays the man page. You can use it on itself. And this just shows you the man page for the manual command, abbreviated to man. And it's using a pager to display it. It just displays it a page at a time, or the however many free lines there are on the window that you are looking at it in. You just hit the space bar, it will scroll through another screen. You can see the various flags that are listed here. And then there's loads of stuff to read. It gets to the end, and it says I've reached the end, and you can type Q to quit to get you back to the prompt. The manual pages are not the most user-friendly pages in the whole of the world, but they do tell you what you need to know. They'll just give you a list of all the different flags, what they do, where the usage of the command. They may suggest other things to use. They may not. But that's the man command. So, that, you know, for example, you could look at man CP for copy, and it would tell you the same sort of stuff. And you just scroll through that. So there are a variety of commands you can use at the command line to do anything you want. Yes?
Yeah, can we get like a list of commands on?
You could. There are, I'm not sure that it was necessarily, oh, didn't I? That's not doing it here. I mean, the short... There isn't an easy way of saying, list, tell all the commands, all the commands in Unix. I'm not actually sure what... Is there a... I mean, this sort of thing, the man intro one, will give you a few of them. It's just a question of, you know, one group of commands leads on to another. I would suggest that you played around with man intro and then just pick up stuff as you go along. That is the thing, in a sec. If you do need specific commands and utilities for a particular course, you know, you will be told what they are. People won't say, well, you now need to do this, so go away and find out. We will at least lead you by the hand a short way down the garden path. Yes, sorry, your question. You can. Thank you for that. Yes, I didn't know that. The part of the structure here is the file system structure is that the commands are dotted all around the place. So as has been pointed out, you know, most of the commands are binaries, and they'll sit in a directory called bin, and they could be in /bin/user/bin/user/local/bin/user/share/bin. They'll just sit everywhere. So you can find clumps of commands dotted around the place, but they won't all be in one easy to look view location. But yes, if you know your way around the file system, you can use ls, as has been suggested, to look in various locations. Once you've done all this wonderful coursework and various bits and pieces, you will get to the point where you don't want these files anymore, so you can delete them with the rm command. Rm is remove. And for example, I've in order to remove, you need to remove something, and I haven't given it something to remove, so it's whinged at me. It said, I need more information. Normally, if a command, you use it incorrectly, then it will sort of moan at you briefly. The thing about rm is there's also a way, it also has a recursive option, which means that you give it a name, which is normally a folder, and then if you delete that folder, it will delete that folder, everything in that folder, everything in the folders of that folder, and so on and so forth. So someone with super user privileges never, ever, ever wants to type this. So I shouldn't... Even seeing it, I don't like... No, it doesn't look right. I mean, it wouldn't work because it would create problems for itself before it completed, so it wouldn't delete the whole of the file system tree. But, yes?
What happens if you delete a subdirectory and you don't use recursive? Does it dump 1,000 subdirectories into the parent?
No, if you try... You can't... If you just type rm in directory, it'll say... what will it say? Something like, file is a directory or something. It says it's a directory. There's a special directory deleting command called remove directory, which will just remove an empty directory. If you want to remove loads of stuff, you have to use the recursive remove command rm. If you've got an empty directory, then you just use rmdir and you're home and dry. Now, a couple of other commands, and then I'll move swiftly on to Emacs. I mentioned earlier about quota. There is a command, fslq, obvious, isn't it, really? It's the list quota command of the file system suite of commands. This will show you some output like this, and basically it tells you my home directory. Each of you will have something that looks like a container, which looks like this. User dot and then your login name. This will tell you what your quota is. And for me, it's just millions, millions, millions. This tells you how much disk space I've used. That tells you what percentage of my quota I have used. And this tells you the percentage that is used on the bucket that my home directory sits in. There may be other people with their disk space in that same container. And that just says that. So bad things happen when you run out of quota. If you run out of quota, you probably won't be able to log in, because part of the logging in process, certainly if you graphically log in, tries to update various configuration files that it keeps. And it can't do that if your
quota is over because the system won't allow anything to write to your file space. So you want to avoid going over quota if you can help it. And it's the other possibility is that you may not be over quota, but it's possible that the container that you are part of may be full, in which case you won't. The effect will be the same as if you were over quota, in that you won't be able to write to your home directory, even though you aren't out of quota. So it's a useful figure to keep. These two are useful figures to keep eyes on. But basically, if you run the fslq command, it will show you what your quota is, and you can play around with that to your heart's content this afternoon or later. As I've said, with backups, it's backed up nightly. I think it's run at some time, 2 or 3 o'clock. So a snapshot of your files is taken in the early hours of the morning, and that all gets put into slash yesterday. Okay, so this is my home directory. This is the demo inf teach directory. Do an ls, you'll see there's a yesterday there, and then if I'm very lucky, if I do an ls of yesterday, you'll see the snapshot of what was there yesterday. And had I, oh, I did have a foo file. Oh, well, never mind. If, let's put the goo back. That's good, isn't it? Let's put the goo back. In this location, we can see that there's a file name called goo there. In the yesterday one, there isn't one, which basically means that if I work on the file, that file today, and then the end of this afternoon, I delete it by mistake, that won't be in yesterday because the snapshot hasn't been taken. So if you work on files during the day and you do a, you create them and then delete them accidentally during the same day, that's very unfortunate. You'll only be able to get back the state it was in yesterday. And the files in yesterday are also updated. So if you create a file, it goes into yesterday overnight, and then if you delete the file in your home directory, then when the next snapshot is taken, the yesterday copy will be deleted as well. So they're kept in sync, but 24 hours out. So you need to be aware of that. So don't expect everything you've ever done to be kept in yesterday. Yeah. It's confusing, that's what it is. Ignore it, it shouldn't really be there. It's just the way the snapshot is taken. And yes, because these are links, it's just a link to somewhere. It's a recursive link. If you follow it, you'll just go round and round in circles. Because the yesterday existed in your home directory, it's put in there, but it's not of any use. If it did the yesterday thing like you suggest, that would be fantastic. But it doesn't. So unfortunately, that's the way it is. So as I said, you'll see most of these file names are sort of alphanumeric. You can call a file anything. Unlike Windows, Unix doesn't care what a file name is. You can call a text file, you know, foo.exe if you want to. You can call a binary foo.txt. It doesn't matter. That's the wonder of Unix. It can also be very confusing, but Unix evolved in the days before graphical interfaces and felt no need to constrain the user in such a way. So you can call a file anything you like. It's probably best to limit file names to letters and a dot, numbers, an underscore, that sort of thing. The shell is a powerful, a command interpreter, which we call a shell, is a program in itself which acts on the commands that you type in. And it has various shorthand ways of doing things, and some of these are activated by special characters. You'll see a list of the special characters in the notes, but for example, things like ampersand or semicolon, you wouldn't want those. You couldn't very easily get those in a file name anyway. But don't try. Just keep the file names reasonably sensible. The file names can be as long as you like, this is a very long file name containing all the letters of the alphabet, is a proper valid file name. None of this stupid 8.4 rubbish. But maybe Windows has moved on, I don't know. So file names, you'll see that having said that Unix doesn't care what a file is called, some of the applications or some of the application writers in their zeal to make things a little bit more Windows-like, although God knows why, have written applications which will make assumptions about files. So if an application sees a file with something blah, 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 dot PDF, it will assume that that is a portable document format file and it contains a representation of a page of text or anything else. So some of these will require special applications to use. And again, there's a list of some of the file suffix there which will give you an indication of roughly what they might mean. But again, this is basically, it's conventional. There's nothing that says you have to call your file names by anything in particular. But if you're doing a C program, for example, most people would assume that it would be called .c. If you want, there's a useful utility called file, which if you're not sure what a file actually is, it will try and tell you. In this case, it says goo is empty. That's because it is. Foo is, it says it's ASCII text with no line terminators. And I'm not sure I can see anything there. No, I apologize, that's... It says that's a directory, just a useful thing. One other thing that you may well find useful is the history command. If you just type the cursor keys, you can cycle through all the commands that you've previously done, and you can then find one that you like the look of and edit that to do something slightly differently, or to do the same thing again, doesn't really matter. If there is a command that you've got embroiled in, you've got no idea where you are, it's just gone horribly, horribly wrong, the command is sitting there, or you're not sure, Control-C is your friend, it's basically an abort. The Control-C is holding down the control key and then typing the C command, and Control-C just says, oh, sod it, and goes off and gives you the prompt back. Note that what I'm going to show you briefly next is an editor. Is everyone reasonably comfortable with what an editor is, a text editor? Does that make sense? It's what you write text in. It's just an application that allows you to write basic text. The one that we use here is Emacs, which has been around for a while and is quite user-friendly and very good. If you know of another unit, for those Linux aficionados amongst us, sorry?
Vi.
Yeah, I was going to mention Vi. Yes, Ed maybe. Anyway, this is an esoteric discussion that is only going to be held between consenting adults. But Emacs is the one that we suggest. As I may or may not have already said, we give you lots of defaults and recommendations. If you know a better way, and I stress the words no and better, then feel free. You know, if the Unix environment offers you tools with which you're familiar but that we don't recommend, then fine, use them. We don't say you have to do this. This is just a suggestion. Emacs is slightly different in as much as everyone will assume that when you are using an editor, you will use Emacs. Some of the coursework will have been tailored so that it works better with Emacs than with other editors. But you are basically free to use whatever you like as long as the end result is the same and acceptable to the course lecturer or whatever the hand-in requirement is. All this does is gives you up a new window with a load of introductory blurb, which I don't really care about. Moving around the editor is, you can use the cursor keys or you can position it with the mouse. This is a non-graphical version which is just fired up using the same outline as the terminal window that I'm using. So you just type in loads of text. If I were a true Blue Peter fan, I would say here's one I prepared earlier. But that's not the case. So just basically you type in text. You know, if you were typing in your your C program, you'd type it in here. If you were typing in an essay, you'd type it in using this sort of thing. And you'll just use this mostly for code preparation. And you'll find out the sorts of codes. It has its own modes and so on, but basically it is just a text editor to manipulate plain text. There is a practical session using this, which I think is the second one, so you will get a chance to play around. You can use lots of, for example, the control keys are used a lot in Emacs. Control K, for example, will kill a line, and you can just keep hitting Control K and it will keep deleting a line. But, excuse me, it should be fairly intuitively obvious how you move around. Excuse me while I choke. And you should be able to explore it for yourself. When you want to quit Emacs, which is always useful to know, Control X and Control C will take you back out again. You'll see we've gone back to the command line. One of the things that I will mention also is the prompt. You type your command. Sorry, you can't see where I'm pointing, can you? Where's my cursor gone? You type a command, and normally what happens is you'll type a command and you'll get the prompt back. When you type a command that's more interactive or that goes away and does something that takes a longer amount of time, you won't get the prompt back. It will just sit there and wait until the job has completed. And when it's done, you'll get the prompt back, and not until. And with something like this, which is just basically expecting me to type stuff at the keyboard and then type an end of line, as soon as I finish, I get the prompt back. But there's a little bit more about job control. I mentioned one of the characters I mentioned was an ampersand about one of the characters you shouldn't use. That is a job control command, and it sticks the job that you've just initiated into the background. You can run many processes under Unix, but you can only run one at a time from the command line. If you've got a process that will do loads of stuff but not need interaction from you, then you can put it to one side, which is called putting it in the background. It will run and keep running, but it won't require input from you from the command line. So you can then put that to one side, put it in the background, and you can get the command line back and do other things. These are things that you will experiment with in these few short moments that we've had together, which have been very enjoyable, by the way. I haven't been able to tell you anything in any great detail. There is a section on Emacs in the notes here. There is an Emacs practical as part of one of the practical sessions which were available from downloaded from the course website. Have you all booked your practical sessions up in the labs for this week? It's a drop-in session, but I think they try and suggest that people split themselves up into groups so I don't get everyone all at once. Okay, before... Are there any questions? Anything anybody wants to ask? They may be... Yeah. So do they have gedit? I think gedit may be there. Basically, if there's something that you know and want to use, see if it's there. If you want to install, if you're competent enough to install software, you can install it in your own directory and run it from there. You can't install it elsewhere. But we're reasonably flexible, so if it's not there, then and you can install it, then feel free to do so. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what provisions they've made. The labs, I will just say the labs are, I think, this afternoon from 2 till 4 or 2 till 5, and then every afternoon for the rest of the week. If you are coming to the labs, then I'd rather you came, because I'll be there, to start with, so I can get you all going and make sure you've got stuff, because I won't be around all the time. So if you turn up at midway through, I may not be there. Yeah. Sorry, say again? Yeah, you only need to go, yeah, I mean, they're all drop-in sessions. As long as you go to one and you work through the practicals that are available online. I mean, you don't even need to go to the sessions themselves, as long as you feel confident enough and you can work through the practicals. The practical sessions are really for people who want to chat about it or need a bit of additional help. It'd be lovely to see you there, but don't all come at once. Yeah. Say again? Probably not. No. We're out of time now, so if anybody wants to come down for a question or a chat, then feel free. But thank you all very much. Hi.
Is it possible to get a handout, a copy of handout?
If there aren't, what I'll do is I'll bring some more along.
Are you going to? Next class. I signed up for the laboratory tomorrow. But
right.
If you say it's going to last till 5, I think...
Well, no, that's the slot. You don't have to come all that time.
Uh-huh.
You know, you come for as long as you want.
Because I start work at half 4 tomorrow.
All right, okay, yeah. Well, in that case, I mean, you come along and I'll have some spare handouts mm-hmm. there as well as the other ones. So
okay, so I'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, bye.
What room is the advanced
section? Level 5. Yeah, level 5, I think. I'm assuming it's on the list somewhere, but reasonably sure. Reasonably sure it's level 5. But there's a big lab, and if it's not level 5, it'll be the one below. But I'm reasonably sure it's level 5. Yeah.
Can I ask if we should sign up for this drop-in lab?
You don't need to sign up. I'm not sure what arrangements the course organizers have made.
So we can come whenever we want?
Yes. I mean... nice to sort of know who's going to come when, so you don't get like 100 people on one day and none on the next. But
I saw that there from 2 to 4 p.m., right?
Yeah.
And does it start at 2 o'clock or it's starting just at 2, at 3 and at 4?
No. It starts at 2 and then runs onwards. There'll be people around.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll normally get there at 2 and there'll be less help available the longer it gets in the afternoon, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because so, but hopefully there will be some of them most of the time.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't got my laptop yet. I only have a netbook. What sort of laptop would you recommend for this? For the informatics program?
It doesn't really make that much difference. I mean, even a Mac or a PC, it's fairly straightforward.
I mean, are there any requirements? Like in terms of
most stuff nowadays can run anything. I mean, it may sound a bit daft, but it doesn't really make that much difference. I think I'll wander.
Right.
I'll wander up, so we'll get the neck back.
They appear not to have done.
Listen, could you tell them I'll open up the...
Thanks. Is that your jacket as well?
If I open up the sign-up sheet about 1:30,
mm-hmm.
that gives people without laptops time to get to a computer.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I'll pass that message on.
Cheers.
See you and cheers.
problem. Which society is?
Okay, I think there's maybe going to be another announcement about society as well.
We'll do that at the